This is Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast brought to you by TaylorTalk.org. Hello, all you Swifties out there. Welcome to episode 78 of Taylor Talk. My name's Adam.
I'm Maya.
I'm Diane.
And I'm Steve.
And I don't have a whole lot to say, which is very bizarre for me. So I'm just going to turn it over to Maya for the news.
All right. So our first news item is pretty exciting. We are about to get a new Taylor song. Yay!
Woohoo.
According to the Daily Mail, Taylor Swift was so moved when she saw a film based on Britain's Got Talent winner Paul Potts' life that she decided to write a song for it. The song is called Sweeter Than Fiction, and she wrote it with Fun guitarist, like Fun like the band, Jack Antonoff. The film is going to premiere this Friday, September 6th at the Toronto Film Festival, and a portion of the song is going to be played during the credits, but the full song won't be out until sometime in early October. We're still waiting for an official release date, so stay tuned for more information.
Well, Adam, I guess that answers your question.
I was just about to say that.
Wow.
Last week, we were wondering if Taylor had a connection to Fun, because Fun has a Nashville show the day after her final show. So we were speculating whether or not Fun might make a guest appearance at one of Taylor's concerts. What if now, in light of this new information, Fun does make an appearance and they do the song from this film, the new one?
I have a feeling that I think that the chance of them showing up at her concert is relatively high considering the timing. However, I don't think that they would sing that song.
Oh.
I think that they would sing one of Fun's singles because the song won't be released yet in September.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, wait. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I think they'll do one of their songs and it'll still be great.
Okay.
That's what I think.
It would be cool, though. Dare to dream.
Yeah. Maya's ruining all our fun.
Fun pun.
And our second and final news item for today is that Ed Sheeran has cleared up why Taylor dropped the F-bomb in a conversation with Selena Gomez.
Taylor did what?
Yeah. Talking to Selena at the VMAs, and we have a video of that in the episode guide, so you can watch it if you want.
So Ed basically said Taylor was not saying it towards One Direction, as is widely speculated. Yeah, I thought it was funny. I saw someone on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, and I feel bad because it's someone I actually know, that said something about they think Ed Sheeran should be Taylor's spokesperson.
He should. He says the best things about her.
He does.
Like, whenever
he says
does
really
interviews,
nice things.
He just like stands up for her, and it's so great.
Yeah, so if you're curious to see Ed's explanation, go check out that video. It's an interesting one.
Well, and I think it's true for another reason. If you watch, actually, the eyes of Selena, she rolls her eyes as soon as Taylor says that.
Uh-huh.
And I can't think of anything where, if she was saying that about One Direction or specifically about Harry Styles, where a friend would roll their eyes at that comment that you made. So obviously, the only time people roll their eyes like that is if you're making the comment to them saying that. That's why I think that it is true what Ed's saying.
Way to read into the body language,
and Ed
Steve
is friends with both of them, and he seems like a very honest person to me. Like, I don't think he would lie about that to the media. I think he's trying to clear it up.
I think the media ran that story as far as they possibly could.
Like, I think the media has a motive, because if they say something like, oh, Taylor dropped the F-bomb about One Direction, then they get tons and tons of, you know, clicks on their pages and whatnot. But the real truth is not as exciting at all.
No, so, of course. The media doesn't tell the news. They tell you what you want to hear to get them to
like,
or get you to their website.
I just saw a headline today that says Taylor Swift says F you to One Direction at the VMAs. I'm like,
no, that's blowing everything out of proportion.
Not
and
right. I also saw something today that said that Tim McGraw cheated on Faith Hill with Taylor Swift. So
I was just
what?
About to bring that up.
Oh.
I was just about to say that, Maya.
Weird.
You reminded me of that when you said you saw that headline. I was like, oh yeah, the Tim and Faith thing,
it's
too.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen.
So ridiculous.
Of course not. Tim McGraw is like old enough to be Taylor's dad.
Who thinks of these things?
People who are dirtbags and just want views and don't care about anything else.
They don't care about Taylor. They deserve to... I can't say nasty things.
To what? Shut the F up, Adam?
Oh, no. Are you pulling a Taylor?
I am pulling a Taylor. Yeah.
But the good thing is Taylor has nice people like Ed on her side. So
yeah. Yes.
Lucky for her.
All right, great. Thank you for the news, Miss Maya.
You're welcome.
At this time, we're going to turn it over to Sammy from T-Swift on Tour to tell us what's been going on the Red Tour this week. Sammy?
Hey guys, it's Sammy at SamIam1331 from T-Swift on Tour, here with your weekly Red Tour wrap-up. Taylor had a show on Tuesday the 27th in Sacramento, California. Coming off her win at the VMAs, Taylor wowed the crowd with the secret song Our Song and the first live performance of The Last Time with Gary Lightbody. She also opted to skip Begin Again. On the 30th, Taylor was in Portland, Oregon, where the secret song was Enchanted, and on the 31st, Taylor performed in Tacoma, Washington, and the secret song was You're Not Sorry. Gloriana was in the audience as well. Taylor leaves the West Coast and heads for the Midwest for some shows before heading south. That's your weekly Red Tour wrap-up. Bye, guys. See you next week.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Sammy. Remember, guys, if you want updates literally down to the second of what is going on Taylor's tour, go follow T-Swift on Tour on Twitter. If you don't have a Twitter account, make one and go follow them. Simple as that. So our next segment for the episode, Tell Me Why, we got a question we pulled off our Ask FM account, and it's a pretty simple question. I have a pretty strong opinion on it. I'll see what you guys think. The question that was submitted to us is, ever since Taylor and Harry broke up, I've been wondering if it's okay to like both One Direction and Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That's fine.
Yes.
100%.
I feel like this has become an advice column, this segment.
I think it has, and I like it.
If you like both of them, then there's no reason to not, just because of their personal lives. They're also musicians, and they make music for you to enjoy.
I have this harebrained scheme, not a scheme, a theory, but I am starting to think that Taylor and Harry are cordial. I don't think they're friends. I don't think they're getting back together, but I think they're cordial. Fine.
There's pictures of them. They were hanging out at the VMAs, like afterwards.
I don't know if they were hanging out, but there's a picture of them in the same group. Yeah,
and they were in the same picture.
Someone who was at the VMAs tweeted that she saw Taylor during a commercial break go over and like hug him and say hi.
Well, that's very polite of her. So if she can be polite to Harry, fine now. Okay.
Yeah, I think they're totally respectful. And I mean, one of the things to add to that too is, you know, when Taylor made that crack when she was accepting her award about thanking the person who it was about, and she was smirking, and then they panned over to him and he was kind of laughing about it. Like, that's what I think. I think it was a playful jab. I don't think, as the media is portraying, that it was this blown out, like, she was taking another stab at him and being immature. I think it was a playful jab.
Yeah, I think he's fine with it, and she's fine with it, and like, I think what everybody forgets is, like, they're adults, and they've moved on.
Exactly. So the short answer to that question, is it okay to like both 1D and Taylor? Of course it is.
If you like the like music, whoever you want.
Yeah, if you like
even the K word.
No, I
mean, oh, let's not get crazy here, Steve.
I'm gonna say even him, because if Taylor has gotten over it, then you should too. Just like, I will happily say that I think John Mayer's new album is really great, and I really like it.
Good for you, Maya.
Because he's an amazing musician, and I don't care if he's a douchebag in real life. That man can write songs really well. So, go ahead and like whoever you want.
Cool. Well, thank you for submitting that question. Remember, guys, if you want to submit to the Tell Me Why segment, it's just our open discussion, ask FM or ask.fm/TaylorTalk13. Carrying on to our main discussion, I figured it was about time to break down this song because it's been requested by 3 people already. The requests keep coming in for this one. By the time it got to 3, I'm like, oh, let's just do it. We got at Evan Holmquist, an anonymous person who emailed us, and Emily who emailed us, all asking us to analyze Tied Together with a Smile, which I think this is the first time we are analyzing something off her first album since Red came out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've talked about her first album thing since last summer. So yeah. We're going back in time in this episode.
Wow.
So it's a good thing to attack. So, I mean, what are all your initial impressions to this song before we get deep into it? Not everybody at once.
No, I like this song. I like the song a good bit. It is a slower song, but I'm okay with it. A lot of the stuff on the first album, even the slower songs, I really, really liked. I think some of the messages are very important that get portrayed throughout this song, but we can dig into those a little deeper here.
I like what you hit on, Steve, because something that's interesting with this song and something unique about it is it's one of the songs that people can use in an argument where people are like, oh, Taylor just writes about relationships. It's like, well, actually, maybe not so much.
That's a good point. Not much of a relationship song here.
Not even not much of it. Not at all.
Well, exactly.
So why don't we get into what it's about? Who wants to take it?
Diane. Oh, you want me to do it? All right.
Well, somebody.
Okay.
Somebody has to.
All right. Well, thanks for nominating me, Adam. Well, I believe that she said that she wrote the song for a friend who was having body image problems. She was, I guess she was...
slash, like, also an eating disorder.
And she said, you know, that is one of those moments when your heart kind of stops. How can somebody that seems so strong have such a horrible, horrible weakness? Something that's killing her. Luckily, I've talked to her about it, and she has gotten help, and she's fine now. So it seems like to me that Taylor wrote the song for a friend who was having trouble, and this song, like, was a big help to her, because, I mean, it just shows you that you don't have to be like that. You don't have to hate your body like that, you know?
And I'm assuming it's never been revealed who it is, because that would probably be kind of personal.
Yeah, I don't think she'd ever want to say who.
Right. I don't think it should be, for that matter.
I mean, I think, like, my impression of it was, like, less that she was necessarily very pretty, although I think, I mean, who knows, maybe she is, but it's that she was really popular in high school, and she was, like, this big personality and kind of, like, the last person that you would have expected to have some sort of big insecurity. She's, like, one of those girls that kind of just everyone loves and looks up to.
The golden one.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Taylor calls her.
Yep.
Which that alone portrays like the solid message in this song. It's showing that everybody kind of has problems and you're not alone. And I think that's a very powerful message, particularly from such a young teenaged Taylor.
Yeah.
To convey that message.
Wise beyond her years at that point.
Now she just writes about breakups, you know?
Oh, God.
not so much.
I mean, I think it's impressive that she wrote this song sort of before it was something that people were like more aware of in the media. I feel like now it's something that people actually talk about and it's sort of more acknowledged, but like when this song came out, it was sort of more taboo to talk about and acknowledge. I think it's really cool that she actually brought it up.
What's a shame about that is an interesting stat is that 1 in 5 women struggle with some kind of eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a lot more common than you'd think.
Yeah, I don't have the details on that step, but I think that's 1 in 5 women in the period of the lifetime. I don't think that's specific to an age. But at the same time, it's still something that's sort of, like you said, taboo, and particularly back then it was a bit taboo, but needs to be talked about nonetheless, and Taylor really attacked it with this song.
Well, another reason it doesn't get talked about a lot is a lot of times it's not obvious. Because it is something that can be kept inside and not broadcast to, you know, out to your friends. Sometimes people, you know, have friends that have no clue that they have an eating disorder and then, you know, later find out that they did. So.
Right. So let's get into the secret message of it. Secret message is you are loved. Self-explanatory, right?
Very self-explanatory. Yeah.
Yet it's like 3 words. That are very powerful, that sum up the whole song, and that teach a lesson, and can teach a lesson to people significantly older than Taylor, younger than Taylor, who admire her, anybody. So I think that's kind of a cool secret message. It's a little bit different than some of the other secret messages in other songs, because it's not like identifying who it's about, but identifying the lesson of the song, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good point, Adam.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad I could make at least one good point in this conversation.
I mean, it's not exactly like your normal, like, debut country album song.
No, it's not at all.
But then again, like, Rascal Flatts, every time they come out with an album, there's always some super depressing song about people dying. So,
yeah, at least no one dies in this song. This song has an uplifting message.
That's true.
So, this was one of the many early songs that Taylor wrote with Liz Rose. So because it's on such a mature topic, how much influence do you think Liz Rose had in the writing of this?
I mean, I think Liz probably, you know, she had input in terms of like developing the melody and like deciding what words to put where, but it seems like such a personal experience that probably the actual subject matter just came from Taylor herself.
Yeah, I have to agree with Amaya on that one. It seems like, you know, something that Taylor, it could have been to the point that Liz may have said, well, give me some of your personal, you know, things that you know about people and school and that kind of stuff. And it would have been like, well, I had this one friend that had an eating disorder. And she's like, well, you know, this would probably be a great song to write there to kind of get the whole idea out there that, you know, you should know that you are beautiful and, you know, hopefully get some people through some of the eating disorders and such.
Do you think Taylor intended this song to be almost, what's the word? I don't want to call it like a PSA, like a public service announcement, but I mean, do you think she wrote it for the purpose of helping this girl specifically or helping girls in general? Or do you think maybe she wrote it for a more personal reason, like helping herself cope with a friend's problem?
Is all of the above?
Yeah, probably a little bit of all of it, really. I mean, it can serve more than one purpose.
That's fair.
And don't you think that Taylor writes a lot of songs so we are aware of, like, the situations that have happened and, you know, we may have something that we went through that's similar and may have learned from it, that kind of thing?
You know, a lot of I think that's possible, Steve, because, you know, like I said, this song has been requested by multiple people that listen to the show. And I'm not calling all of these people bulimic, but that maybe they know someone that went through it.
A lot of people have been requesting for her to, I can't get my words in the right order, requesting for her to sing it like on B stage at concerts.
Yeah, this would be
someone
great.
Asked her to meet and greet, and she said that she doesn't think enough people know it, and she thinks that most of the audience would be bored.
No, then teach them about a new
song. She thinks it's not popular enough and people wouldn't like it.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I feel like Diane said, teach them about a new song. It would be a good opportunity to introduce people to a song they may not be familiar with of hers.
I feel like she's being very picky about it, though, because even just yesterday, someone asked her to sing Picture to Burn, and she said that, first of all, she hates it, but second of all, it was not a single, so she doesn't want to play it.
But she's played songs that weren't singles.
I know. That's just what she said. She said, it's not a single, so people aren't going to know it. They're going to be bored. She doesn't want to play it. And she
hates
that song.
Well, why doesn't she just play our song again? Like, that's far less boring.
She will probably play it again. And the people who haven't been to the show before will enjoy it.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I mean, you know, one of the things is, if you're going to do a performance, there's nothing more awkward than trying to sing and have the audience not want to be part of the performance right at that time. You know, they don't sing along. They're not cheering. That is really, really awkward. Nobody that's performing wants that, regardless how good a song may be or, you know, enjoyable to a certain group. You kind of have to appeal to the masses, at least at a show.
Yeah, but Steve, at the same time, a show is a great outlet to introduce people to a song they may not be familiar with, and tied together with a smile. Like, I feel like there may be another reason besides saying, oh, it might not be popular among the audience.
Yeah, she just might not want to play it.
Kind of like a controversial song. I'm not sure that she's ever performed it live.
Like, yeah, I mean, it might just be something where she doesn't want to go back to
personal.
Yeah.
Maybe she just forgot the lyrics and doesn't want to try remembering them again.
I'm sure she could remember them. I mean, she sang Cold as You earlier in the tour, and she'd never done that one live.
It's a fair point.
I wouldn't want to, like, hug whoever convinced her to sing that, because that was impressive.
That's a good song.
Yeah.
So something interesting about this song also is, you know, the lyrics are rather short. There's really only two main verses.
Yeah, there's not much.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder why that is. Is it because the chorus is the more powerful part of it, or? I don't know. I'm just staring at the lyrics right now, trying to figure it out.
I mean, the chorus is kind of long. I don't know. But I think, like, there could have been a bridge.
Yeah, she could have added a bit more.
I mean, again, this is also an early song that Taylor wrote, like, in high school. So, you know, her writing skills weren't exactly perfect
yet. What they are now.
Yeah.
That's true.
This is why I don't write songs, because I have no clue. I know the different parts of writing a verse and that, but not very well at all. So I have no input on this.
I think Steve should write a song. I vote in favor of Steve performing it on the next episode.
Wow.
It can be called Steve Writes a Song.
Steve writes
about
a song.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Nah, that would be horrible.
Steve, let's do it. Me and you, let's do a duet. No, let's write a song about Taylor.
There's like other guys on the internet who've written songs about Taylor Swift. You can just steal one of theirs.
That would be
that's not very creative.
Yeah, that would get us
I'm
in
just
trouble.
Saying. Like
we
Tyler
write
Ward
our own.
Wrote one, it was pretty good. Could perform that.
There's no we here, Adam. It's just you. I want nothing to do with writing a song. I don't have the skills for it.
You never know until you try.
I think Steve's a closet poet. I think he could do it.
Well, speaking of poets, Diana, it just I was just looking at the title of this song, of Tied Together with a Smile, trying to figure out exactly what that is about. Because I think this is one of the more unique titles, in my opinion.
It is an impressive metaphor.
Because
like
you're tied together with a smile, but you're coming undone, is how it goes in the song itself. Mm-hmm. And like Maya said, it's a very impressive metaphor. It's like saying, you know, she's got the smile on the outside, but she's unraveling and kind of revealing herself.
So you can imagine it's a sort of like popular girl with lots of friends who like, you know, just always seems to be happy and having a good time. And it's like they're pretending to be happy is like the only thing holding them together.
Because they're actually not happy in there. They have a lot buried underneath that smile. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a good metaphor.
Like, it's something, it's, yeah, it's impressive to me that she came up with that. I mean, she came up with a lot of amazing things when she was that young, but just still impressed.
So, Maya, before we were recording, you were talking about, you don't favor this song. Why?
It's not, okay, it's not that I don't like it or appreciate it, because I do. It's just not a song that I, like, be like, oh, I know what I'm in the mood to listen to, you know, because I'm never really in the mood to listen to it. I think it's a song with a lovely message, and I know that it has been influential in a lot of people's lives, but for me, it's more of a song that, like, I've listened to a few times and appreciated it, and then, like, sort of left it alone, because it's not for me.
I like that explanation, actually.
Thank you.
Diane, what do you think of the song?
I think it's beautiful, but yeah, like, I mean, it's not like a jam that I would listen to get pumped about something. It's not one of those types of
songs. It's not your workout song? Like, you're not going to run on the treadmill to Tied Together with a Smile?
No, surprisingly, I will not do that.
Not going to have a dance party?
No, but I mean, it is one of those songs that I might listen to if I am feeling a little bit down about myself or whatnot, you know. We all have those moments, and I mean, I think it's positive and beautiful, but it's not something I'm going to listen to every day. But that doesn't mean it's a bad song.
Steve, you're last to be put on the spot.
I just listened to it chronologically.
What do you mean chronologically?
Usually what I'll do is I'll just pick one of her albums and just play it in its entirety. So that's usually when I listen to it. Like, I this would not be a song I would jump out and be, oh, I really want to listen to this song today. Mm-hmm. Like, I listened to just the whole first self-titled CD, and I'll listen to it.
Good job, Steve.
Was that the answer you were looking for?
No.
I didn't know. That's what I do. It's weird.
Adam, do you have an opinion?
My opinion?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? Before we recorded this, I hadn't listened to it in quite a while, and I never really thought about why. It just never jumped to me as one of my favorites. So
do you know why?
That's why I liked Maya's answer so much, is because it's similar to what I would say. Like, it's something that I am not jumping around to go listen to all the time, but now that I did listen to it and read the lyrics and actually think about it, it's an unbelievably written song, and I think Taylor was really talented and really ahead of her time for writing it. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So I don't know. I'd say that pretty much wraps it up for our Tied Together with a Smile. I hope we did it justice for all of the people that requested it of us. But if we didn't, you guys can always send in your opinions, right?
Yeah. Tell us how you feel about it. I'm actually curious.
Exactly. What Maya said.
Yeah.
So moving on with the episode, if we've got a couple of mini segments here, we got to read them. So Diane, what is the first one we've got?
The first one comes from Lena via email. And they say, if Swifties ruled the world, there would be a $13 bill with Taylor's face on it.
Ah. Wouldn't it be cool if they, you know, they make those stickers that you can put on dollar bills, like for the Christmas time for like Santa? What if we printed out like Taylor ones and put them on dollar bills?
I think I've seen those before, actually, Steve. Because really? They have them with like the Beatles on a dollar bill, with Elvis on a dollar bill. I'm sure there's a Taylor one.
I mean, we don't have a $13 bill in our currency, but if we did, that would be awesome.
Well, maybe there should be, because it'd be far useful than the penny.
Or the $2 bill?
Or the two, yeah, the $2 bill is so awkward.
That's a weird
I just want to split it in half.
All right, we should start a petition, trade in the penny for a $13 bill.
It would actually be quite a money-saving adventure for the United States, to tell you the truth. If you ever look on, there's some good videos on YouTube about how much the penny cost us.
Yeah, before. It costs 1.2 cents to make a penny.
What?
But the president said that he doesn't want to get rid of it because people are weirdly nostalgic about it. And like people
about Lincoln. It's probably Grant. Grant's probably over there petitioning to keep the penny because it has Lincoln on it.
Well, but isn't he on the $5 bill, though? I mean, he can get enough Abe there.
Grant can never have enough Abe.
Okay.
That's true.
What can you do?
Okay, moving on from currency. Our next submission is from Forever Enchanted 13 on Taylor Connect. And she said, if Swifties rule the world, the two other Swearin' songs on Ed's phone would be available to our ears.
That was the perfect one for Maya to read.
It was.
Maya loves Ed.
Yes, I do.
That would be cool. Wasn't Ed Sheeran, wasn't there something with his phone being stolen at some point?
Yeah, he keeps losing his phone. And well, it stresses Taylor out a lot because
those songs are on there.
Has, well, that, and he like has her in his phone as like Taylor Swift. So like every time he loses his phone, she has to change her phone number.
I'd be annoyed, too. I'd be like, Ed, you need to chain this to your wrist, boy. You need to stop losing
And it. Yeah, he said like he has his whole like next album just on his phone.
I'm surprised it hasn't leaked yet if someone stole his phone.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wish I would have known this when I was in Club Red, because seriously, Ed gave his phone to my friend Cindy to hold when he was taking a picture. Like, oh, she was seriously, goodness. She actually, I took a picture of her holding Ed Sheeran's phone.
She should
phone.
Have started, like, just texting stuff to herself.
too bad it was an iPhone, not one of those Samsungs you can kind of just blink together and just copy everything from one to the other.
That would be cool.
That would be crazy.
Ed has said in interviews that, like, he wants to collaborate with Taylor again, and that they've written other songs and blah, blah, blah. So I'm sure that more songs that they've done together will be released to the public.
How about a whole next album that's just Taylor and Ed together?
Well, interestingly enough, Steve, I actually read in an interview with him recently that he said he won't be returning the favor of having Taylor on his next album.
Why?
He said it would not be imaginative.
Wait, okay. I think I know which interview you're talking about, and you read it wrong.
I don't think so. It was in MTV.
No, he said, like, I know it's not imaginative, but I'm probably going to collaborate with Taylor again.
The quote from the article is literally no, because I think
Should
that would not be imaginative.
Should we perhaps do a fact check? Should we go on the
I've
Google?
I've got the link to the article right here.
Okay.
Let's enter it in.
Okay, I saw an interview where he was like, I know it's boring, but I'm going to collaborate with Taylor again, because I'm boring.
I'm fine with him being boring.
The headline of the article is Ed Sheeran confesses why he can't get Taylor Swift for a duet.
Okay, then he's been saying different things to different people because...
Maybe he's doing it to throw people off because somebody does have his phone and they've got the album already.
I swear, I just saw an interview like very recently where he was like, yeah, I'm probably going to collaborate with Taylor again. Sorry, I'm boring.
Here's like the quote, like the full quote from regarding his next album. I haven't finished recording it yet. So you see, I can't really tease it if it's not properly finished, he told MTV News on the VMA red carpet Sunday night. It was, but then I had to go back in. I kept writing songs. I've probably written like 70 songs over the past year. I did like 30, then I did another 40, so I'm going back to record some more. And it says, Sheeran has spent part of 2013 touring with his pal Taylor Swift on her Red Tour, and he shared, I've met lots of people whilst being on tour, but he noted that as of right now, Swift, who enlisted him to appear on her 2012 album track, Everything Has Changed, won't be returning the favor. Why? No, because I think that would not be imaginative.
Then I guess he changed his mind in the last, like, few weeks because he just did another interview where he was like, yeah, I'm probably going to collaborate with Taylor again. I know that's boring, but whatever.
That interview was published August 26, 2013. So just a couple days ago.
I guess he changed his mind. But I feel like, whatever, even if she's not going to be on his next album, I still think that they're going to release more songs together.
Probably. Maybe.
I think so.
They better. I wouldn't complain. Hopefully.
Me either.
Why don't we get back to the minis?
It's probably a good idea.
We're way off topic.
It happens.
And this one comes from Twitter, from 13_TMac. You know you're Swiftie when you can't brush your hair because your head is involuntarily hair flipping when listening to Taylor Swift.
I can't say that I have that problem. My hair is not that long, but ladies, care to comment?
I don't usually try to brush my hair when I'm hair flipping, but interesting.
I like that visual, though.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It is pretty funny, right? All right. Next one is a back-to-back from Sophie, who emailed two of them to us. First one is, you know you're Swiftie when you tell your dad that your iPod is on shuffle. So he says, so it just plays Taylor Swift songs in a random order?
That's kind of what shuffle is like on my phone, yeah.
Yeah, with me it's just Taylor, Ed Sheeran.
Pretty much,
I have Taylor and Ed also. And a little bit of Fun actually mixed in there too. Not much, but a little.
Look at you getting creative.
Yeah, and Train.
Oh, I like that one.
Maya's buddies. All right, the next one from Sophie said, you know you're Swiftie when you're playing your iPod and your mom says, put your Swiftie thing away now.
Wow.
I think it's kind of funny.
This next one comes from Emily via email, and she says, you know you're Swiftie when you listen to We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together over 1,000 times the week it comes out.
Holy
That's
Lord.
Mind-blowing.
Wow.
That's a lot of times.
And you know what? I had to do it, so I emailed Emily back, and I was like, did you really? And she's like, yeah. Like, apparently the iTunes counter on her iTunes says over 1,000.
She must have just played it when, like, 24/7 for that week.
Probably. She said her family got sick of it, so.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
I thought I listened to it a lot. Jeez.
That's impressive, Emily. So, thank you to everyone sending those in. One last mini segment before we go is, what are Swifties listening to? And this week was suggested that you listen to Fools by Lauren Aquilina? How would you pronounce that last name?
Aquilina?
I'm not 100% sure, but one of those two is right.
Probably. Either way, we'll have the YouTube video on the episode guide. That was Aubrey who texted that to us. And so, Diane, Maya, Steve, we all listened to it before. Is it a good song?
Yes.
I
thought it was amazing.
Steve,
I think
loves
I'm going
it.
To iTunes after this.
The song's really pretty. The video's really cool. Definitely check it out.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Cool. So thank you for texting that to us, Aubrey. Remember, guys, you can also submit to any of the mini segments. There's various ways to contact us. You can email us, taylortalk@taylorswift13.org. You can tweet us, Facebook us, Taylor Connect us, or ask us a question on Ask FM. All four of those are to taylortalk13. U.S. and Canada can text message us or leave us a voicemail to area code 240-31-SWIFT. And finally, everybody in the world can leave us a voicemail on the website, taylortalk.org. Remember, guys, those methods are all on taylortalk.org with the contact tab at the top in case you forget it. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. This has been episode 7. Steve, you're interrupting me, Steve. I've got this routine here. If you break me off like that, I forget what I'm saying.
I know. That's why I did that. I thought it was fun.
I
Go ahead,
hate
Adam.
You.
Continue.
What was I saying?
This is episode 78. Blah, blah, blah.
So,
blah.
For episode 78, this has been Adam,
Maya,
Diane,
and Steve.
And we will see you guys all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
This podcast is not directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.